Grant and Danny, welcoming you back on 106.7 The Fan. We're with you until 6:30 tonight. Our double play coming up at 3:45. I'm going to get my cousin on. He got the Jackson Holiday home run ball at Camden Yards, the grand slam yesterday. Pretty cool. And then he and his son went down to the clubhouse to meet Jackson Holiday, which should be a fun little story. As the exclusive sponsor of this show, the law firm Kondorian Murad can guide you and your family in the right direction. They'll help you draft a will, set up a trust, or create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them G&D sent you to score a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Danny, I'm a little nervous.
Okay.
I might need your help here. So typically, when I have plans after work, I either throw some clothes in the car so that I can change for whatever the evening plans call for, or I'll stop by my house on the way to wherever I'm going. I don't have time to do that tonight. And your boy, leaving very early for training camp, wasn't smart enough to throw clothes in the back of the car. And frankly, I'm only like barely an adult. Normally my wife helps me. She wasn't home this morning.
Right, there's no help.
So there was nothing. So it was just me being a grown-up, and I didn't do it. As my dad used to always say to me as a young kid, where are your shin guards? So I'm supposed to go to a nice steakhouse tonight. I'm supposed to eat a steak dinner this evening.
Yeah, you are.
I think in a polo shirt and khaki shorts, I could do that. I don't think anyone's kicking me out.
You could pull it off.
I don't feel great about it.
Yeah. Though. Can I, is it, what's the normal attire there? That is it one of those like, hey, it's a steakhouse, but it's like suburban, not really that sophisticated, or is it
white tablecloth? No, we're going
white tablecloth.
It's Randy's and Tyson's. Yeah. It's a good little steakhouse, mm-hmm. White tablecloth. It's a very nice spot. Me and the lads are getting together for a little State of the Union.
Mm-hmm.
Me and four of my buddies.
Steak of the Union?
Ah.
Oh, thank you.
Little Steak of the Union. And they're all like, some of them are getting off of work. They're going to be in suits. I already texted the group. I'm like, hey, just so everyone knows, I'm going to be in shorts and a polo. Feel free to not dress up so that I'm not the only one that looks like a schlub. But they got to do them. I never like being underdressed. I think you always look like a bit of a goofball.
I hate it. I hate that feeling because a couple times when I had some friends were in town and they did this really nice thing at a buddy's house, but it was like this like catered sort of nice sophisticated event, and I came straight from Nats Park. I was like, it was 100 degrees and I couldn't wear what I wanted to wear, and like we took like there were nice photos taken of the event, and it's like I'm in a sweaty polo and like kind of stained khaki shorts with like, yeah, you know, a little barbecue sauce and honey mustard. And I'm like, I'm in the photo too. I hate that feeling.
It's not a good feeling. We have been talking a lot about training camp today on G&D. I was out at practice. All of our camp coverage is presented on The Fan by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenry'sWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. One of the stars of the day was rookie lineman Brandon Coleman. I was enamored with the big fella. Talk to him this afternoon right after practice.
Brandon, getting out here today, getting to see you, getting first team reps with the left tackle spot. It's got to feel good at this point in camp to continue to get those opportunities.
Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to show out here and show them what I got, and grateful that I get those opportunities. And all I can do is just give everything I have at practice, you know, to keep those opportunities going. And no matter what second team, first team I get, you know, I'm going to be out there and just show them what I got.
Played on the left side, we've seen you on the right side, even in a little bit of guard. And that versatility for you, do you feel like that'll always be a part of your game, or are you looking to find a home and kind of get entrenched?
You know, I think I'll find a home at some point, but I'm always keep that versatility up there. You never know what can happen. You know, you might be able to be a left tackle like I was in 22, and then injuries happen, you got to move to a different spot. So I know I'm just working on staying ready on both sides and being comfortable wherever on the line.
What's up, Larry? One-on-ones for the first time today. It's got to, for fans and for us in the media, that's an exciting pillar of training camp. Did you guys have a little more juice for that today with the pads on?
You know, I just see it as another opportunity to get better. I feel like every team period we have is like a one-on-one period at this level. And I see it as another opportunity to, you know, work what I know I got to work on, timing, you know, just trusting myself, being confident in my set. So I see it as another opportunity.
How do you feel like you're grasping the playbook at this point? It's got to be an arduous process. Nick was telling me that they throw everything, you know, one day, one week at a time, yep, and then they'll scale it way back in season. Yep. So it's got to be overwhelming right now.
Not at all. Really? You know, I kind of compare everything to what I did in college. The playbook that we got was pretty simple to grasp. You know, just being able to study every day, and you guys get used to it. You know, it's a lot of mental reps at home in the hotel, wherever you at, just kind of going through by myself, having a little walkthroughs at night or whatever, and then coming out here. The staff's been great about, you know, letting the rookies get a bunch of walkthroughs and making sure that we get a grasp of it, that any questions we have, we can go to them. So they made it easy for us to learn. I mean, obviously, these reps in training camp, going full speed, help you a lot of knowing timing of certain plays and all that stuff. So it's been a pretty good adjustment.
What have you been doing after practices to unplug? I don't know if you're a guy that puts your feet up and watches the Olympics at night, or what have you been doing?
During camp, it's kind of tough to get that time. You know, I get home at like 7 and I go to bed a couple hours later. So kind of do some recovery at home. I got a fiance that doesn't hear from me for 12 hours. So get to give her like an hour or two to talk to. Watch some TV, you know, just watch a show, or like you said, Olympic sports. It's kind of get to the people that you need to talk to during camp, family and friends. So it's kind of what I do.
Lastly, I just saw you signed autographs for a better part of an hour. I'm just curious what maybe the mindset is on spending that much time with the fans, and what it's like for you to be one of the wanted players here.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't have thought to be as big of liked by the fans as I thought. Maybe it's just like, I don't know, I never knew O-linemen get that much love, but I'm just thankful that they're out here, not just for me, but like for the whole team. You know, it's not just like we have practice down here in the heat for hours, watching us practice, showing their support. So that's the least that I feel like we can do, I can do. Be out here, show them some love, sign some autographs, have some conversations with them. You know, that's what it's all about, building that connection.
Thanks, Brandon.
Appreciate you.
Brandon Coleman of the Commanders, the 67th pick in the draft, a third rounder for Washington. Very funny at the end there to say, I didn't think I would be this popular. People like me more than I thought they would. Bro, I don't know if you know this.
Offensive lineman in this town?
Number one, we like our offensive linemen in Washington, D.C.
Yes, we do.
Might want to read up on those Hogs.
Uh-huh.
But number two, I think people are expecting might be strong, but they're certainly praying that this guy's the long-term left tackle. And he might view it as, maybe I'll play left tackle. Maybe I'll play right tackle. If I'm a guard, no problem. He said he hopes to find a home and just lock in on one spot. But I think a lot of fans are crossing their fingers that maybe you just stole your left tackle in the mid-rounds.
I think that's very well said. Because the promise and the hope, right, that you unearth a new star offensive lineman without having to, you know, pay first round premiums or go to free agency or trade somebody away, etc. You could become a celebrity in this town real quick if you're good on that offensive line because of the history. I mean, again, you'll hear this a million times over. Anybody of a certain age, basically my age or older, they think all that's been missing for the last several decades is just do what they did in the 80s. Just run the dang ball behind the great offensive line. Every coach that's come has been stupid. Every GM has been stupid. Every quarterback is stupid. Just check to a run. They think it's this missing easy formula because of how great it was for basically a decade and a little bit extra on either side of it. So, yeah, offensive lineman in this burg, if you've got a little bit of promise, you got some upside, people get excited.
There are 15 offensive linemen at training camp. 9 of them are going to make the roster. I guess it's possible that a 10th could as well. Cornelius Lucas was not there today. Excused absence. Didn't get to watch him work. So Coleman took the left team reps. The starting offensive line today was kind of what you'd expect. Brandon Coleman at left tackle. Third round pick. Nick Allegretti, who they signed from Kansas City, who you'll hear on the show at 5 o'clock today. The former Chief Super Bowl champion last year. He was the guy that got a lot of attention for playing basically for the entire Super Bowl with a broken bone. Allegretti's going to be the left guard. Tyler Biadasz, $10 million man in free agency. Center who came over from Dallas, Dan Quinn, and the Cowboys brass really targeted that came over here on the coaching staff. And then Sam Cosmi at right guard, the second-round pick as a tackle who's been kicked inside and who's elevated his game to being one of the better players at his position. Right tackle, I would think, is Andrew Wiley's, but Andrew Wiley has been banged up. I don't really know what his injury is. He was in uniform. He had his helmet on at different points. He went through some parts of individual drills. Didn't really do much of the team stuff today.
It's been vague, hasn't it? Some of the reports, like tightness, soreness, things like that.
Yeah, I don't know if he's banged up is what I heard. In a knee or something. I don't really know. But I don't think he's seriously hurt, but he's hurt enough that he can't do a lot of practice stuff. So I would think because of what he makes, because he played well at the end of last season, that you know they will give him the first crack at right tackle. Today it was Trent Scott, who's got some starts in his career, the former Pittsburgh Steeler. But other names, remember, Ricky Stromberg was a third-round pick under Ron Rivera's regime.
Yep.
he's in trouble, maybe. I mean, there's nothing saying he makes the team. Is he as good as he was before a pretty serious injury? Chris Paul's been a mainstay the last couple of years. Seventh-round pick. He's far from a lock to make this roster. They signed a guy named Michael Dieter from Houston who can play center and guard. I think he would absolutely make the team. He was kind of handpicked by this group. Does Braden Daniels, the fourth-round pick by Rivera's group, a tackle last year, you know, now a guard, does he make the roster? So there's a lot of competition. And I'll say one theme you're going to notice, not just on the O-line, but in general around this roster is, I think a lot of the Rivera draft picks are in big trouble.
I think the writing's on the wall in a lot of cases.
Like, if Rivera's still here, you're not cutting guys because it looks bad. But what does Adam Peters care about what the Marty Party evaluated you as 2 years ago?
Yeah, hypothetically, let's say they were 10-7 last year and Ron just retired and this new regime came in, it might look a little different. Well, I just like my guys better. When you were 4-13 and bad on both sides of the ball and, frankly, unacceptable in a number of positions, and they went out and signed 25 free agents in the first, like, 90 minutes that you could sign people, yeah, some dudes are in trouble. Like, the guys that were stars last year at training camp. Remember Mason Brooks, or we swooned over Chris Paul's good reps in a preseason game. You know, Daniels was a long-term project. Maybe not. Maybe there's no long-term. Maybe it's someone else's project, right?
He might still be a long-term project.
For another
but
team.
His time here is a short-term stay.
Yeah, for a different franchise, right? I mean, not to be flippant about it, but there's nothing. Like, if you've produced and you've been consistent, there's nothing to worry about. If you haven't, there's no benefit of the doubt because the current regime is the one that drafted you. You know what I mean? Like, this is the nature of the turnover, of the change. And this is, frankly, why you do it. You bring in expert eyes that aren't just going to say, well, I picked them and I'd like to be right. You know what I mean? You take that ego element out of it.
So a few weeks ago, we talked about X factors on this roster. Like, I call them pendulum swingers. If this guy ends up being whatever the best version of him is, this is what it looks like. But if he doesn't do that, if he disappoints or underachieves, or he's just a mediocre version of what we're hoping for, you know, then the sight lines change a little bit. You just heard my interview there that I did after practice, Danny, with Brandon Coleman. There is a legitimate case to be made. Non-Jaden Daniels, because quarterback in this league is just different.
Right.
He is the biggest X factor on this team.
I think he is, yeah.
As far as, like, if he's awesome at the best position for him, if he's a above-average left tackle this year, the sight line for the team changes pretty considerably. Now, if he ends up at guard or he's a backup for 11 weeks and he plays at the very end of the year, it's just a different thing altogether. Now you're counting on Cornelius Lucas or maybe some Trent Scott. But if, let's just say week one, you're in Tampa, it's hot, you're at Raymond James Stadium, and Brandon Coleman goes out and plays 69 snaps on offense and has 67 really good reps and they feel like they got their left tackle, we're going to be having different conversations about what this team might be capable
of. No question about it. If you'd like one, normally if you'd like one of these left tackles, you got to get into Tristan Wirfs territory. Just signed himself a deal worth $28.12 million per.
He's having a good day.
He's having a nice day.
I'd like to be Tristan Wirfs today.
Trent Williams, you know, Penei Sewell, Christian Darrisaw, also our producer. Huge, huge, huge contracts in the upper 20s. Again, that's the league. Quarterbacks in the 50s, almost 60 now. Wide receivers and left tackles. You notice a theme? How can you pass the football? Can you protect the guy passing the football? And can you catch the passes that the guy throwing the football throws? That's who's getting paid right now.
Okay? It's too bad Christian Darrisaw went right before they drafted Jamin Davis. Wait.
Hold on. What's that?
Hold on. Something's coming.
I'm being told.
I'm getting something in my ear.
They reached for a guy that probably would have gone end of round two.
Yeah. Wait, there's more coming. And Darrisaw went after Jamin.
And he went several picks after. Okay. That's always great.
He was
good to
available
remind.
To Washington.
It's great. Always. It's so fun, though. Isn't it fun to look back? And you want to go free agency, that's what has to happen. And nobody was available for a free agency. Like, if you're good at this, it's the same as quarterback. If you're good, you don't leave. If you produced at all, you're not in the open market even a little bit. So you probably would have had to go first-round pick. And you're already going to do that with Jaden Daniels. If they find a solution to this critical position through a third rounder that they did by maneuvering around the board and adding picks here and there, unbelievable. What a coup for the team.
Well, think about this. If Coleman's their left tackle long term and Daniels is their answer at quarterback and they solve that in the same class
Come on. In
years 1 and 3 and they're both on rookie deals together, making no money at positions where really good players make 50 and 30 respectively, you know, or actually 55 and 30 respectively. I mean, the sky's the limit now. I mean, mm-hmm. The whole world opens up to you. And honestly, if Coleman can play left tackle at a high level, we'll see. very early and nobody knows anything, and he may end up being a guard. We'll find that out. But if you hit on him and you hit on Daniels, Sanders still looks like the real deal. The rest of the rookie class, you're just, whatever you get is nice. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, that is already a Adam Peters take a bow kind of class. Before we talk about Johnny Newton, the fact that Jordan McGee is climbing the depth chart in practice already. For what it's worth, and it's not much early, Luke McCaffrey didn't really pop to me much today at all. And I don't know that he has a whole lot during camp talking to people, which is not to say he's been bad, but there's nothing that stood out where you go, okay, I really like that, or this looks different. And same thing about Ben Sinnott. Project is probably too strong of a word. I think Sinnott early on helps them more as a blocker is what I'm noticing. You're going to have Zach Ertz, if he's healthy, probably being the guy catching passes, and John Bates will be in line, and I think Sinnott does both. Like, you've got your receiver, Ertz, you've got your blocker, Bates, and then I think Sinnott does both. But I'll bet you he's way more involved blocking than getting targets in the first part of the year.
I mean, it could take a little bit for tight ends, too. I mean, obviously, you're matriculating from college to pros. There's a big adjustment for everybody. But you've seen sometimes tight ends that don't come from pro-style systems all that often can have a little bit of a funky adjustment to be able to do both in terms of route running and some of the things he was asked to do. So it'll be interesting. To me, the opportunity was going to be there because I'm not a big Zach Ertz renaissance believer, but if he's still got something in the tank, then all of a sudden his target share or his offensive opportunities might go down.
So let's take Daniels out of the equation. If Brandon Coleman is an X factor, because if it goes really well, he raises and elevates what this team's capable of substantially. Maybe he's the leader in the clubhouse in that conversation. Who else would you put in that category of X factor? If it goes really well, maybe they're a couple wins better, and the outlook moving forward changes considerably. We can open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines next at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. Also, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL is hurt, and his status is in question going into the start of the season. We'll give you an update next on Grant and Danny. He's Danny, I'm Grant, this is The Fan. We've been talking about Commanders training camp. The topic at hand, Brandon Coleman, the rookie offensive lineman, and the state of that O-line. He's an X-factor. Who else on this team would you consider as capable of him as changing the sight line if he can max out and maybe overachieve in 2024? Vic's an Akakeek on Grant and Danny. What's up, Vic? How are you?
What's up, guys?
Hey, buddy.
The biggest X factor for me, and I hate to sound redundant, is Brandon Coleman. If Brandon Coleman can set the edge, if Brandon Coleman can create a wall for Jaden Daniels, if Brandon Coleman can help him achieve three snap, if he can help him achieve play action, if he can help him keep his jersey clean, if he can set the edge for outside zone, all those things that all left tackles have to do, we will be good. That's the bottom line. If Brandon Coleman cannot, even if our defense is good or solid, we will be still considered bad because Jaden Daniels will not be able to be successful, period.
Well, I don't know if he'll be unsuccessful, Vic. Thanks for the call. But his floor lowers. And I think he's just way more inconsistent at that point because he's going to be taking shots. You start feeling those ghosts.
Yeah, and the ceiling lowers too because it's like Sam Howell. You can't get away with certain play calls. You can't do the thing where you got a long developing play and a double fake on double move and try to exploit stuff if you don't trust a guy to hold up in pass pro.
I'll give you a short list number two option for me on the X factor list that I would add to Brandon Coleman, and that's Jahan Dotson.
Yeah, to me, those are guys that are one and two probably.
Jahan Dotson has got to get back to looking like a legitimate starting wide receiver. It wasn't there last year. As much as he played 16 starts rather, played in all 17 games, to go out and have sub 50 catches and be fewer yards from 523 as a rookie to 518, the ultimate disappointment of a year. It was good to see him today putting in work. I mean, he was crisp in his route running, one-on-one. Now, I one-on-one, is the wide receiver should cook DBs. He should absolutely win because those guys, it's not really authentic, truly, to how you play a game. You can't use the boundary. You're playing within a scheme. You're not going to have help. A bunch of other reasons why the drill is set up for the receiver. But you could just see the way he sinks his hips and moves, and everything is kind of, for him, like, it's just fluid.
Looks natural.
And yeah. I would still say, I'd be curious, I might have to run this by some people out there if I'm out there again this week. I still think he's their best route runner. Now, that and $5 won't get you a whole lot, but if Jahan Dotson can go catch 65 balls for 750 yards this year, knowing McLaurin's going to go 70 for 1,000, now all of a sudden you feel like they got a pretty good offense and Jaden Daniels is going to have a hell of a year.
Yeah, so you're looking to replace the Curtis Samuel production plus elevated production from Dotson, who was fourth on the team in catches last year behind Logan Thomas, and had right about the same yardage totals, again, as Logan Thomas, who was not terribly dynamic. So if you replace Samuel with Dotson, now you're looking for somebody else to kind of step into that void. You get increased production from the running back spot. Gibson's share is going to go to Eckler, and maybe then some, right? So you're trying to figure out where some of these the mouths to be fed, where the balls are going to go. Dotson, to me, is the 1A here, right? Because they didn't do much in free agency. Didn't do much in the draft in this regard. Again, McCaffrey is their highest touted or highest drafted pick as a skill player on offense. But I think Dotson's renaissance, or him being good, not just, hey, he's better, he's taking an incremental step forward, that's not good enough, frankly, for this unit, for this group. But if he's bona fide good, if he's a real number two receiver in the NFL, then they're right. And this offense, it means Jaden Daniels is spreading the ball around. It means they're moving the football. It means they're getting first downs and probably scoring some points.
How much do you care? And I don't mean specifically you, Danny, although I want to get your thoughts, but you guys out there as well, about the lack of size at wide receiver, about how redundant it seems like some of the body styles are. Because I've never really concerned myself much with like piecing together a wide receiver room where, all right, I've got a couple 6 foot guys. Now I need my 6 foot 3 inch red zone threat who can go up the ladder and score touchdowns. The one guy with any real size that they brought in was Luke McCaffrey, who's 6'1.5", rounded up to 6'2". And he's the only 6'2 wide receiver who might be on this roster. But if you look at it, Terry McLaurin is 6 foot, 200 pounds. Jahan Dotson is listed 5'11", 182, and I'll bet it's 5'10 and change. Alamide Zaccheaus is 5'8".
Yeah.
Now, he weighs 193 pounds. I mean, he's sturdier and bigger and stronger and thicker than, say, Dotson's frame, a little more diminutive. Deami Brown is 6 foot and change, maybe 6'1", and 195. So McCaffrey at 6'2", maybe one of the reasons why they liked him was his size. There were a couple of guys at training camp. Like, I liked what I saw today from a roster hopeful named Bryson Tremaine. He was there last year at camp as well. He's from Stanford, kind of deep down the board wide receiver. He's 6'4", 215. And on a team like this, maybe there's more value in just having a guy like that be your seventh wideout who's deactivated than there would be in other places. But you look around the league, there's size at wide receiver everywhere, and most of their guys are still 5'11", 6 foot.
Yeah, if I was to draw up kind of an ideal, I would have a bigger receiver or two, right? I mean, I just would, just give my preference. I like having a nice little mix.
I didn't mention Crowder is probably going to be on the team.
Yeah, he's 5'9", 5'10".
Yeah. He's 5'8", and change.
Yeah, I mean, so I would love that. I would love a bigger target. I mean, I'd love a superstar that could do everything, like, an A.J. Brown or somebody that's that big, strong, fast, can do everything. So, yeah, if you can get a player like that, you're good. Doesn't mean you can't complete a forward pass, though. It's not like Miami's receivers are huge. But so it's one of those things where you'd rather have the best players possible that are available to you. If they don't happen to be the 6'4" jump ball winners, okay, we got to design something else. So it really puts the onus on Kingsbury and company to get those guys open, to scheme them open, because you're not going to have as many, maybe, 50-50 balls or YOLO balls or, God forbid, Jay Gruden-style fade routes every time you get inside the 10-yard line. So, yeah, it limits you in certain ways, but it also should be exciting in others, right? The emphasis has already been yards after the catch. You want more of that. And presumably guys that are smaller and quicker could be capable of it.
Yeah, so I've been thinking a lot about this because I've never cared about needing a big wide receiver. to go along with the guys that are a little more normal sized or 5'11", 6 foot, maybe even undersized by today's standards at some spots. But their tight end room is huge. And I wonder if that's their answer in a way, right? Like, you think about what they've got right now at tight end. Ertz is 6 foot five. Ben Sinnott was way bigger than I thought. He's 6'4" and change. John Bates is 6 foot five. If you think Cole Turner's got a chance to make the roster if they keep four, he made a couple really athletic plays today. He's got a huge catch radius. Just doesn't block that well. But he's 6 foot six. Armani Rogers, who was on the team, if not for injury last year, is 6 foot five. So as much as you'd say they're wide receivers, it's a smaller group. Their tight ends are huge. Mm. And I wonder if that is part of the design. When you've got to go up the ladder and make a contested catch or you're running a fade ball, let's make the defense think we're going to bunch everything up in tight, jumbo look, three tight ends, whatever, and then maybe we can motion a Cole Turner or a Zach Ertz or sin it out or something and run the fade or the back shoulder to them. You know, there were a couple. The only real contested, like, up the ladder balls I saw in practice today were in the middle of the field to tight ends, and maybe that's how you combat that.
That's a reasonable theory. I think if everyone had their druthers, they would have a bigger receiver as well, right? But you don't just do it for the sake of doing it. You don't just go get someone because they're 6'4" and they can't play. You know what I mean? Like, there's a trade-off there, certainly. But maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's how they solve that, right? If we don't have any big receivers that we like at the time or they weren't available to us, then this is kind of our solution to it. Your jump balls, your close to the goal line, your box out type plays, and we'd rather have our tight ends doing that anyhow. There's something to that.
Monty says, speaking of tight ends, we really need a tight end to step up. Hopefully Cole Turner was just not being used correctly. It has become a weapon for Daniels. This offense will take off. Big X factor. I think that's fair. It's not going to be Turner if they have their way. I mean, they drafted Ben Sinnott to help in that area, and they signed Zach Ertz. I think Bates is... You want to find John Bates, look at the line of scrimmage. He's going to be blocking for the most part. But early on, if healthy, Ertz will get those chances, and if it doesn't work out, that's when you probably turn to Ben Sinnott. My guess is a guy like Cole Turner, maybe, if you could stash him, would be on the practice squad. And if something were to happen with Ertz, maybe he'd get a shot as the year went on.
In terms of Sinnott's a guy I'm fascinated by. I am not a huge believer in, as I keep calling it, the Ertz Renaissance, this like third act where he's dynamic again. I can't remember who it was. I apologize for not being able to attribute it properly. Somebody called him a catch and fall tight end, which is kind of what he was his last year while healthy in Arizona. That doesn't interest me all that much. If you're such a tremendous blocker that you can afford to have that as part of your sort of total delivery, okay, I can deal with it, but that's not what he's known for. He's a receiving tight end who blocks fine. I don't really want that. I mean, to me, so I thought Sinnott would have a path to be effective, whether it's as an H-back in certain plays or an inline tight end or kind of doing everything under the sun, that versatility. Because when you invoke Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle, which Adam Peters did, it's hard for me not to have some giddiness and excitement there about what his role might be as the season progresses.
I teased this, so I want to get to this. Justin Herbert is dealing with plantar fascia in his foot, and he is going to miss several weeks. The Chargers are hopeful that he will be back for week one. That's what they're saying today.
Oof.
But they don't know. And with these injuries, there's really no way to know right now. Apparently, it's really painful. They're going to get him off his feet. He's not going to be involved, obviously, in any practices. And I'd imagine if that's the case, he won't be coming down to the practice field. But the 26-year-old, who's already been paid, going into year five now, one of the best pure passers in the National Football League, is going to miss out, you'd imagine, in a new offense with Jim Harbaugh at quarterback, head coach, rather, and a new coordinator with Greg Roman, new scheme. He's got everything's new. Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins in the backfield. His receiver room is basically completely reworked. DJ Chark, Ladd McConkey, among the guys they brought in to start. He's got a new right tackle and Joe Alt. All of the changes they've made, this is a really big blow to the Chargers, I think, that you're going to miss the entire ramp-up process, and they're hoping basically they could just get him back right in time for the season, but it's not like you're just running your fourth year in an offense. So this is a dagger for a team that had some outside hopes, I think, of maybe surprising and being a wild card team, but all the more reason in year one for Harbaugh why it's going to be pretty tough for them, I think.
Yeah, that is a bummer. I mean, you know how I feel about him. He is so exceptional. Just some of those throws, you just kind of, you know, you throw your notebook up in the air. You go, are you kidding me? Like, how did you even see that? How would you have the chutzpah to make that throw? And there are only a couple guys on the planet who can deliver it like he can. That is a blow. If this was last year and he'd been in the same offense for a couple seasons, they go, fine, keep him on ice anyway. But to your point, I think it's a really good one. This is all sort of new. They're running that ground and pound, nine tight end, jumbo line of scrimmage stuff with some play action. He needs the reps.
Easton Stick, who finished last year when Herbert, I think he broke a finger at
one point. He did, yeah, missed the last five games or so.
And then Max Duggan, who played in the national championship. They got destroyed. He probably wishes
they came in second there.
He wouldn't have by Georgia. But Max Duggan of Texas Christian, a seventh-round pick last year, second and third on that Chargers depth chart at quarterback. In case you're curious, we're Grant and Danny. Ever gone to a game because a player was getting called up or making a debut, hoping you'd see something cool, and then they hit a home run and you get the ball? Happened to my cousin yesterday. We're going to have him on as part of our double play. You're listening to The Fan. Moments from now on Grant and Danny will get you a double play driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealer. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. G&D on the Fan, taking you up to 6:30. No Nats baseball tonight. The Nationals back home for a homestand that starts tomorrow. Going to include the Milwaukee Brewers coming to D.C. for three. By the way, you know that Bryce Terang, who's having an unbelievable season for the Brewers, is the brother-in-law of Tress Way, Commander's punter.
Indeed.
So I caught up with him after practice today. I was asking about Terang, who's got 32 steals playing gold glove defense. Pretty cool that just in that family, they're watching NFL games for Tress.
It's not bad.
They're watching ball games for Bryce Terang. Yesterday at Camden Yards in Baltimore, Danny, an amazing happening for my cousin and his son. So they go to the game. They're going to watch Orioles baseball. They obviously want to see Jackson Holliday called back up. This is his chance to reintroduce himself to the Birds fans after he had two hits and 34 at-bats got sent down, right? He's back in the big leagues. It's the big story of the day in Baltimore. And then Jackson Holliday does this.
Holliday drills it. Right field. Down the line. Grand slam! The happiest of holidays!
Bedlam at Camden Yards. We're watching on TV in studio. And I'm like, that's so cool. Good for Jackson Holliday. Good for the fans. This is a long time coming. And then we see the madhouse scramble to get the baseball. And about 90 minutes later, I find out that my cousin Tim, my first cousin,
won the scramble.
Janine's brother's Jerry's kids, Tim. I've spent Christmas parties with him for years. My cousin and his son Wyatt got the baseball on Utah Street. So, Danny Ruya, I present to you cousin Tim.
Cousin Tim!
Thank you, guys. Thank
Dude,
you,
what a day for the Sartwells.
Here.
Whoa.
What a day, man. Oh, what a day.
So take me through how this happened. So are you guys like doing the running back and forth depending on if the hitter's left and right to get a ball bit, or like what was going on?
Not at all. So, start at the beginning. I travel a lot for work. And so I try to set aside times for dad and Wyatt days, right? Like I just want to have time with him and I know I'm gone a lot, on the road. So we do things together on dad and Wyatt days, whatever that may be. And, we wanted to go to the Orioles game. It was a 12:30 start. It's a great time for a five-year-old. We knew it'd be hot, but it'd be fun. So him and I went online and found two tickets. I let him pick the two he wanted to. We were section 24, row 16, seats 1 and 2, right up on top of the O's dugout.
Love that.
So, yeah, great. Just great seats. It was awesome. Fly balls are shooting around near us and everything. We were hoping to get a ball. But as we walk into the stadium, we're walking down to our seats, and Wyatt's nose just starts bleeding, just gushing blood, man. Like, he gets nosebleeds when it gets super hot and he's outside and it's humid. It's just typical D.C., DMV, Baltimore summer weather.
Sure.
So I'm a dad just stuffing napkins in his nose up on the concourse.
Yep, been there.
Just by the way, what a terrible way to start a baseball game is a bloody nose.
Dude, he was ready to go. He's like, when are we leaving, Dad? Like, this is miserable. We literally, it was almost two innings. We missed Couser's first home run. We heard it, but we ended up going to the first aid stand, and they ended up getting it to stop, like, inside the little first aid room. So we get back to the seats. It's tough start. Tough start. The kid's got blood on his shirt. Yep. You know, if you see some of the photos, there's some blood on his shirt.
Poor little guy.
And it's hot, you know. So we're sitting there. We're at the seats. We see Gunner's triple, and then O'Hearn knocks him in. And then we're through the next inning where I think Barger hits, like, the ground rule double. And I can just tell he's just not having a great day. And so I'm like, why? Let's just go get Aritas, man. Like, let's just go get Aritas. And, and cool down, get out of the sun for a minute. It was hot. And, of course, we're walking down the concourse, and the Aritas line is full. It's kids' day there, right? So it's kids' camp day, and it's just the line is astronomical, and he's just like, nah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, no other kids are going to want Aritas on a hot day.
Exactly, right? They've got one stand on the first base side, and it's full of people. So I'm like, hey, man, they're giving away free ice. They're around the corner. They just got tubs of ice they're giving to people to stay cool. And he's like, all right, let's just go get some ice. And so we walk over and grab two cups of ice, and we look up. So this is on Utah Street now, coming down towards Boob's Barbecue out there in front of the warehouse. And we see Jackson Holiday up. And we're like, I know Wyatt loves watching from the Utah deck when we've gone to games. We go to a lot of games. And so we walk over there. And we're like, let's just go watch him. And man, as soon as I turn the corner onto the deck, I hear the crack of the bat. And he smokes it, right? Like, that was an amazing hit. And so I see the crowd of people start running back towards me, and I start backing up. And the great dad that I am, I find the ball and just track it, right? And so,
like, in the air, you're seeing it, coming your way.
For sure. For sure. Beautiful blue sky. The ball is traveling fast and high and out towards us on the deck.
Notice, so, Clary, he did not just stick his butt toward the ball. Our producer had a chance to catch a home run ball earlier in the year, and he just stuck his ass toward it and turned around.
No,
so you did not do that.
No. No. I mean, this was literally right place, right time. We got so incredibly lucky. So we turned the corner onto the deck. Jackson hits it. The ball smashes into Utah Street, bounces off something else. I don't know if it was the warehouse, a light pole, one of the things out there, and just bounces right to me. And I just dive on it. Like, I just dive on the ball.
So then,
did you get skinned up or anything? Like, did you get any foreburn?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got my knees all bruised up and cut up. My elbows all cut up. I dove on
That's what
it,
it takes.
Like,
worth
I
it.
Dove on That's
it.
What it takes.
So, but let me ask you this, Tim. I mean, is that at that point, like, bottom of a pile, who comes out with the football on a fumble? Are people trying to get it? Or was it clear that it was yours at that point?
Absolute chaos. People are grabbing at it. People are jumping on top of me. Absolute chaos. But luckily, the Baltimore security guards came over pretty quick and, like, leaned on me and put their hands on me and started yelling, he's got it, he's got it, he's got it. And so they're, like, trying to push people off. Well, at this point, I'm trying to get up off the ground. I realize why it's not with me anymore. Like, I am surrounded by this horde of people. And I'm just like, oh, my God, where's my son? And I just start pushing through the crowd. And luckily, he was right, like, next to me. I just couldn't see him in that split second.
That's
because
scary.
Everyone was just on top of me. Right. And I just picked him up and held him.
So here's what I've always wondered. From that moment, Tim, to, like, when someone approaches you from the team and says, because if it's a normal, just his 11th home run of his career or his second for that matter, that you just get the ball and nobody really does anything. But because it was his first, they want that thing back. How soon was it before someone with the team was like, hey, we want you
Why don't
guys
you come with me?
To meet Jackson and to give him the ball back?
Yep, his name was Kevin, and he was there within minutes. Within minutes.
So, but, like, did you go back to your seats, or you just kind of standing there with, you know, just hanging out? Like, how did they know how to find you?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they found me in the horde of people that were around. I mean, literally, gotcha. I would hate to be a celebrity. I mean, I know Grant and Danny are big celebrities in
Huge.
The D.C. area.
Major celebrities,
how you
yes.
guys major celebrities.
Not
like,
easy
I don't know how
us.
You guys do it.
Mm-hmm.
I know it. But man, just like the people, like this, it's a hot day. They're on top of me. They're the cameras out. Let me see it. Let me take a picture. Let me touch it. And I'm like, it's getting choked out. So I'm like grabbing Wyatt and holding him. And then luckily I was like, give me some air. And luckily security pulled us over. There's some picnic tables out there. And they sat us down and kept some people away from us. And as soon as we, like within a minute of us sitting there, the rep from the team, Kevin, came over and grabbed us and took us inside the warehouse. So got us in some cool air and was like, yeah, obviously the team wants to get this ball back for Jackson. Let's talk about it. So
then you guys go down, and I'm sure people have seen the video that went viral and the picture. I thought it was very classy of you to give him the ball back. And a lot of people enjoyed you. You had mentioned, you know, you would want someone to give Wyatt the ball back, which I think Orioles fans really liked. Everyone was just happy. I think it wasn't Zach Hampel also, the Yankees ball hawk. Who gets
just a
the
win
balls.
There.
And just a giant win that it's a couple people in Orioles gear. But before we let you go, what did you get out of the deal? I saw a signed bat, and I know you said maybe that Wyatt's going to get a chance to meet his favorite player, right?
That's right, yeah. So in the chaos, some guy, one of the security guards, gave us like an Orioles pack of cards. There was a Jackson Holliday rookie card in that, so it's like a Topps trading day card. Jackson signed that for us. Wyatt's birthday's coming up, so the Orioles are going to have us back to the stadium for that night and let Wyatt go down to batting practice and meet his favorite player, Adley Rutschman. Wyatt's in T-ball. He wanted to be number 35 on T-ball. Loves Adley. Jackson may be his new favorite player. We haven't talked about it yet. But
you might have to update that, yeah.
Might have a competition there now.
So go ahead.
Yeah, that we're going to go back for that. Jackson gave us the signed bat, the signed card. We're going to get some tickets for next year as well. But, dude, it wasn't about that for me. It was I would give that ball back 10 out of 10 times. The Orioles have been great about it. Jackson was awesome about it. But that was his ball, man. That guy's ball.
Here's my only question. Did you feel pressured? Like, in other words, did you feel like you had a choice? Like, let's say you didn't feel that way. You're like, dude, I want this. What a keepsake. I just got this kid that's going to be a Hall of Famer one day. I got the ball. Like, did you ever feel like you could have kept it? Not that you wanted to, but do you feel like you could have?
Maybe I could have kept it, but it just never crossed my mind. Like, honestly, like, just being an Orioles fan, having that piece of history, like, what is it going to do? Is this a ball that sits on my shelf? Like, I don't know. Maybe I could have kept it, but it never crossed my mind that I would keep it, I guess I'd say.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think you got the story itself is the
all time. It's pretty cool, yeah.
And then, you know, you did pretty well with the signed bat, the signed card, and some access to Adley in the future. Amazing. I was so fired up when
so cool.
My uncle Jerry, his father, texted me yesterday and was like, you're not going to believe this. And that could go a lot of different ways for my uncle Jerry.
I was
right?
going to say.
And he's like, Tim just got the ball. I said, you got to be kidding me. That's incredible. So way to go. That is awesome. The video that came out last night, I was so proud. And that was a really cool thing you did as a good moment and a good lesson, I think, for dads out there. And great having you on, Tim. Good catching up, buddy.
Guys, I really appreciate it. Really appreciate it. Great memory. Huge thanks to Orioles and Jackson. They've been great about it.
Very, very cool.
Cool, dude.
That's my cousin, Tim. You guys listening, you've all thought about what might it be like one day if I could get the baseball from the player that I go to watch. It happened. Just kind of accidentally because they were hot and wanted to go get some ice cream.
He had a bloody nose and his kid was too hot.
Beltway Blitz is next. You're going to hear my interview with Emmanuel Forbes from practice coming up at 4:30 on The Fan. Moments from now on Grant and Danny, will get you a double play driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealer. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. G&D on The Fan, taking you up to 6:30. No Nats baseball tonight. The Nationals back home for a homestand that starts tomorrow, going to include the Milwaukee Brewers coming to D.C. for 3. By the way, you know that Bryce Terang, who's having an unbelievable season for the Brewers, is the brother-in-law of Tress Way, Commander's punter.
Indeed.
So I caught up with him after practice today. I was asking about Terang, who's got 32 steals playing gold glove defense. Pretty cool that just in that family. They're watching NFL games for Tress.
It's not bad.
They're watching ball games for Bryce Terang. Yesterday at Camden Yards in Baltimore, Danny, an amazing happening for my cousin and his son. So they go to the game. They're going to watch Orioles baseball. They obviously want to see Jackson Holliday called back up. This is his chance to reintroduce himself to the Birds fans after he had two hits and 34 at-bats got sent down, right? He's back in the big leagues. It's the big story of the day in Baltimore. And then Jackson Holliday does this.
Holliday drills it. Right field. Down the line. Grand slam. The happiest of Holidays.
Bedlam at Camden Yards. We're watching on TV in studio. And I'm like, that's so cool. Good for, you know, Jackson Holliday. Good for the fans. This is a long time coming. And then we see the madhouse scramble to get the baseball. And about 90 minutes later, I find out that my cousin Tim, my first cousin,
won the scramble.
Janine's brother's Jerry's kids, Tim. I've spent Christmas parties with him for years. My cousin and his son Wyatt got the baseball on Utah Street. So Danny Ruya, I present to you cousin Tim.
Cousin Tim!
Thank you, guys. Thank
Dude,
you,
what a day
Honored
for the Sartwells.
Be here.
Whoa.
What a day, man. Oh, what a day.
So take me through how this happened. So are you guys like doing the running back and forth depending on if the hitter's left and right to get a ball bit, or like what was going on?
Not at all. Not at all. So, you know, start at the beginning. I travel a lot for work. And so I try to set aside times for dad and Wyatt days, right? Like I just want to have time with him and I. I know I'm gone a lot, you know, on the road. So we do things together on dad and Wyatt days, you know, whatever that may be. And we wanted to go to the Orioles game. You know, it was a 12:30 start. You know, it's a great time for a five-year-old. We knew it'd be hot, but it'd be fun. So him and I went online and found two tickets. I let him pick the two he wanted to. We were section 24, row 16, seats 1 and 2, right up on top of the O's dugout.
Love that.
So, yeah, great. Just great seats. It was awesome. You know, fly balls are shooting around near us and everything. We were hoping to get a ball. But as we walk into the stadium, we're walking down to our seats, and Wyatt's nose just starts bleeding, just gushing blood, man. Like, he gets nosebleeds when it gets super hot and he's outside and it's humid. You know, it's just typical D.C., DMV, Baltimore summer weather.
Sure.
So I'm a dad just stuffing napkins in his nose up on the concourse.
Yep, been there.
Just
By the
stuffing.
Way, what a terrible way to start a baseball game is a bloody nose.
Dude, he was ready to go. He's like, when are we leaving, Dad? Like, this is miserable. We literally, it was almost two innings. We missed Couser's first home run. We heard it, but we ended up going to the first aid stand, and they ended up getting it to stop, like, inside the little first aid room. So we get back to the seats. It's tough start. Tough start. The kid's got blood on his shirt. Yep. You know, if you see some of the photos, there's some blood on his shirt.
Poor little guy.
And it's hot, you know, so we're sitting there. We're at the seats. We see Gunner's triple, and then O'Hearn knocks him in. And then we're through the next inning where I think Barger hits, like, the ground rule double. And I can just tell he's just not having a great day. And so I'm like, why? Let's just go get Aritas, man. Like, let's just go get Aritas and cool down, get out of the sun for a minute. It was hot. And, of course, we're walking down the concourse. And the Aritas line is full. It's kids' day there, right? So it's kids' camp day. And it's just, the line is astronomical. And he's just like, no, nah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, no other kids are going to want Aritas on a hot day.
Exactly, right? They've got one stand on the first base side, and it's just full of people. So I'm like, hey, man, they're giving away free ice. They're around the corner. They just got tubs of ice they're giving to people to stay cool. And he's like, all right, let's just go get some ice. And so we walk over and grab two cups of ice, and we look up. So this is on Utah Street now, coming down towards Boob's Barbecue out there in front of the warehouse. And we see Jackson Holliday up. And we're like, I know Wyatt loves watching from the Utah deck when we've gone to games. We go to a lot of games. And so we walk over there, and we're like, let's just go watch him. And, man, as soon as I turn the corner onto the deck, I hear the crack of the bat. And he smokes it, right? Like, that was an amazing hit. And so I see the crowd of people start running back towards me, and I start backing up. And the great dad that I am, I find the ball and just track it, right? And so,
like, in the air, you're seeing it,
you
like
see it
coming your way.
For sure, for sure. Beautiful blue sky. The ball is traveling fast and high and out towards us on the deck.
Notice, so, Clary, he did not just stick his butt toward the ball. Our producer had a chance to catch a home run ball earlier in the year, and he just stuck his ass toward it and turned around.
No,
so you did not do that.
No. No. I mean, okay. This was literally right place, right time. We got so incredibly lucky. So we turned the corner onto the deck. Jackson hits it. The ball smashes into Utah Street, bounces off something else. I don't know if it was the warehouse, a light pole, one of the things out there, and just bounces right to me. And I just dive on it. Like, I just dive on the ball.
So did
you get skinned up or anything? Like, did you get any
forburn? For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got my knees all bruised up and cut up. My elbows all cut up. I dove on it.
That's what it takes.
Worth it.
That's what it takes.
So, but let me ask you this, Tim. I mean, is that at that point, like, bottom of a pile, who comes out with the football on a fumble? Are people trying to get it? Or was it clear that it was yours at that point?
Absolute chaos. People are grabbing at it. People are jumping on top of me. Absolute chaos. But luckily, the Baltimore security guards came over pretty quick and, like, leaned on me and put their hands on me and started yelling, "He's got it, he's got it, he's got it." And so they're, like, trying to push people off. Well, at this point, I'm trying to get up off the ground. I realize why it's not with me anymore. Like, I am surrounded by this horde of people. And I'm just like, oh, my God, where's my son? And I just start pushing through the crowd. And luckily, he was right, like, next to me. I just couldn't see him in that split second.
That's
because
scary.
Everyone was just on top of me. Right. And I just picked him up and held him.
So here's what I've always wondered. From that moment, Tim, to, like, when someone approaches you from the team and says, because if it's a normal, just his 11th home run of his career or his second for that matter, that you just get the ball and nobody really does anything. But because it was his first, they want that thing back. How soon was it before someone with the team was like, hey, we want you guys
you come with me?
To meet Jackson and to give him the ball back?
Yep, his name was Kevin, and he was there within minutes.
So, but like, did you go back to your seats, or you just kind of standing there with, you know, just hanging out? Like, how did they know how to find you?
Yeah, well, they found me in the horde of people that were around. I mean, literally, gotcha. I would hate to be a celebrity. I mean, I know Grant and Danny are big celebrities in
huge,
the D.C. area.
Major celebrities,
you guys. Major celebrity.
Not
like,
easy
I don't know
being
how
us.
You guys do it. I know it. But man, just like the people, like this, it's a hot day. They're on top of me. Their cameras out. Let me see it. Let me see it. Let me take a picture. Let me touch it. Let me touch it. And I'm like, it's getting choked out. So I'm like grabbing Wyatt and holding them. And then luckily, I was like, give me some air. Give me some air. And luckily, security pulled us over there, some picnic tables out there. And they sat us down and kept some people away from us. And as soon as we, like within a minute of us sitting there, the rep from the team, Kevin, came over and grabbed us and took us inside the warehouse. So got us in some cool air and was like, yeah, obviously the team wants to get this ball back for Jackson. Let's talk about it. So
then you guys go down and I'm sure people have seen the video that went viral and the picture. I thought it was very classy of you to give him the ball back. And a lot of people enjoyed you. You had mentioned, you know, you would want someone to give Wyatt the ball back, which I think Orioles fans really liked. Everyone was just happy. I think it wasn't Zach Hample also, the Yankees ball hawk. Who gets
just a
the
win
balls.
There.
And just a giant win that it's a couple people in Orioles gear. But before we let you go, what did you get out of the deal? I saw a signed bat, and I know you said maybe that Wyatt's going to get a chance to meet his favorite player, right?
That's right, yeah. So in the chaos, some guy, one of the security guards, gave us like an Orioles pack of cards. There was a Jackson Holliday rookie card in that, so it's like a Topps trading day card. Jackson signed that for us. Wyatt's birthday's coming up, so the Orioles are going to have us back to the stadium for that night and let Wyatt go down to batting practice and meet his favorite player, Adley Rutschman. Wyatt's in T-ball. He wanted to be number 35 on T-ball. Loves Adley. Jackson may be his new favorite player. We haven't talked about it yet. But
you might have to update that, yeah.
Might have a competition there now.
So go ahead.
Yeah, that we're going to go back for that. Jackson gave us the signed bat, the signed card. We're going to get some tickets for next year as well. But, dude, it wasn't about that for me. It was I would give that ball back 10 out of 10 times. The Orioles have been great about it. Jackson was awesome about it. But that was his ball, man. That guy's ball.
Here's my only question. Did you feel pressured? Like, in other words, did you feel like you had a choice? Like, let's say you didn't feel that way. You're like, dude, I want this. What a keepsake. I just got this kid that's going to be a Hall of Famer one day. I got the ball. Like, did you ever feel like you could have kept it? Not that you wanted to, but do you feel like you could have?
Maybe I could have kept it, but it just never crossed my mind. Like, honestly, like, just being an Orioles fan, having that piece of history, like, what is it going to do? Is this a ball that sits on my shelf? Like, I don't know. Maybe I could have kept it, but it never crossed my mind that I would keep it, I guess I'd say.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think you got the story itself is the
all-time. It's pretty cool, yeah.
And then, you know, you did pretty well with the signed bat, the signed card, and some access to Adley in the future. Amazing. I was so fired up when
so cool.
My uncle Jerry, his father, texted me yesterday and was like, "You're not going to believe this." And that could go a lot of different ways for my uncle Jerry.
I was
going
to say.
And he's like, "Tim just got the ball." I said, "You got to be kidding me. That's incredible." So, way to go. That is awesome. The video that came out last night, I was so proud. And that was a really cool thing you did just a good moment and a good lesson, I think, for dads out there. And great having you on, Tim. Good catching up, buddy.
Guys, I really appreciate it. Really appreciate it. Great memory. Huge thanks to Orioles and Jackson. They've been great about it.
Very, very cool.
Cool, dude.
That's my cousin, Tim. You guys listening, you've all thought about what might it be like one day if I could get the baseball from the player that I go to watch. It happened. Just kind of accidentally because they were hot and wanted to go get some ice cream.
He had a bloody nose and his kid was too hot.
Beltway Blitz is next. You're going to hear my interview with Emmanuel Forbes from practice coming up at 4:30 on The Fan.